With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City News Day. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Thank you for turning on the radio this morning for your agriculture news. Today's Monday, August 7th. Coming up in today's show, we talk with a young beekeeper who's doing big things. That's coming up later on in the show, but we start off this morning with Brian German.
Some were surprised by certain agricultural groups' support of the cap and trade program, but there are many factors to consider. Cap and trade might not be ideal, but the alternatives would end up costing certain segments of the agriculture industry that are subject to greenhouse gas regulations much more in the long run. The president and CEO of the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association, Roger Isom, explains the issue.
The mandate to get greenhouse gas reductions was passed last year in SB 32. We have to get 40% below 1990 levels by 2030. So you have two choices. You can go command and control, which means you put on controls or eliminate equipment to reduce emissions. Or you can go the cap and trade route, which allows you the opportunity to go get offsets or allowances as opposed to buying that equipment. So you're going to save substantial amounts of money. We looked at it, and if you understand that dilemma and understand that process, you really have no choice but to support cap and trade.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West.
The agriculture economy nationwide continues to struggle. And because of that, many commodity prices remain low, translating into many small farmers and ranchers who are struggling. Roger Johnson, president of the National Farmers Union, recently told the Senate Ag Committee it's important that the 2018 Farm Bill provide meaningful assistance in two fundamental circumstances.
When disaster strikes and when prices are low and remain below the cost of production for extended periods of time, these two scenarios have separate solutions. The first is crop insurance, and the second is commodity programs.
Johnson noted that much discussion and debate around the new Farm Bill has centered on programs that fit a particular budget.
Using the budget as a starting and ending point for the nation's agriculture safety net is problematic from our perspective. Feeding the nation is a national security priority and should be treated as such.
Johnson urged the committee to raise the reference prices under the Price Loss Coverage Program, improve the operability of agricultural risk coverage, return cotton as a covered commodity, and rework the Dairy Safety Net program. Johnson also stressed the vital importance of crop insurance, an essential risk management tool for family farmers, which he said is constantly under threat of budget cuts in Congress. The fast food industry is changing. Pork Chuckoff Vice President of Domestic Marketing, Jared Sutton, says consumers are demanding more from those quick service restaurants.
It's interesting because the quick service restaurants are really as a group, as a segment of the industry, working to redefine themselves. And so fast food is still an important focus and priority for those companies, but it has to be food with some quality attributes too. And that's what's exciting from a pork perspective of how those companies are evaluating the process, certainly the quality attributes of the product that they're sourcing, but also the process to ensure it delivers the best, most optimum eating experience through the flavor profile that the cuts offer. Again, something that pork really stands to benefit from because of all the great attributes that pork cuts offer.
Fine dining also demands high-quality ingredients. Those white tablecloth restaurants are also welcoming the developments in the pork sector.
We're going to see more of pork entree opportunities and menu offerings on across the country because more and more of those decision makers in the white tablecloth restaurants are beginning to understand and appreciate what a well-marbled, high color or dark color pork center cut loin product can offer in terms of an eating experience and still offer a value proposition against some of their signature beef cuts. And we're starting to see that play out now. There's a trend that's definitely moving in our favor in terms of the pork industry. And it's interesting to see how it's playing out both on the fast food kind of quick service restaurant side as well as that fine dining white tablecloth side of the business.
For more information, producers can contact the Pork Checkoff Service Center. U.S. Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue has proclaimed this week, August 6th through the 13th, to be National Farmers Market Week. It's the 18th straight year that the USDA has supported local producers by encouraging families to meet and buy from the farmers and other vendors at their local farmers markets. Perdue signed a proclamation noting farmers markets and other agricultural direct marketing outlets contribute roughly $9 billion each year to the U.S. economy. They also serve as a significant outlet for small to medium as well as new and veteran producers to market agricultural goods, generating revenue that supports the sustainability of family farms and rural communities. Every week, thousands of U.S. farmers markets will feature the range of produce, fruit, meat, dairy, and specialty products available from their local and regional producers. USDA's National Farmers Market Directory makes it easy to locate farmers markets across the country. Buying directly from farmers and entrepreneurs has a major impact in helping to diversify farm incomes and support other businesses by keeping more money in the local community. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Hey, we're out of time, Mike. Hey, thanks for your call. Gotta go. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Soil Talk.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today. Brought to you by NRCS and this radio station.
This is Farm City Newsday. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. We'll be right back with more of the news that's important to you.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's Taylor Hillman.
Growers, industry professionals, and companies are gearing up for the 2017 Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida on August 16th and 17th. Many Californians make the trip to get the latest information from ground zero of the Huanglongbing disease fight. Several companies, like Plant Food Systems, take some of their California growers on a Florida citrus tour around the Citrus Expo.
They get a chance to see Expo, to listen to some of the speakers there, and we also get a chance to visit with some Florida growers and get a broader perspective of what's going on.
Plant Food Systems Western Marketing Manager Mark Brady said growers get to see firsthand how infected groves look, although California is getting more accustomed to thinking about the disease.
I think everybody's seen enough pictures in California of HLB. At this point in time, most growers accept that there may be HLB in commercial groves. We just haven't identified it yet. But the real question is, okay, what can we do about it?
Brady said that's why they also stopped to see how growers are trying to manage the disease and stay afloat.
That's maybe the most important part. We have many conferences here where we have speakers of such where the speak on what their research efforts were. This gives the growers an actual opportunity to see what's going on out in the field, see a little bit more applied research going on out in the field being executed by some of the Florida growers.
Again, the 2017 Citrus Expo is taking place in Fort Myers, Florida on August 16th and 17th. This year, Agnet Media is proud to host United States Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, who will mingle with growers on the trade show floor and draw tickets for our FFA fundraiser. For more information on the expo, you can head to citrusexpo.net. I'm Taylor Hillman for Agnet West Radio Network.
Secretary Perdue is continuing his efforts to get out and meet people all over the United States. One of his recent stops was Alabama.
I've committed to farmers not only here but across the country that we want USDA to be a real partner in the productive capacity of our great American agricultural system.
He also listened to the concerns of farmers at the Delaware State Fair.
We heard great suggestions from them. They had questions about how we could do things better.
The secretary will meet even more people on the ground with a five-state RV tour that will take him to Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana.
Agriculturalists are innovators. They're stewards of the land, and they want to do better. They want a safe, tasty, wholesome, nutritious food supply for all of us.
Secretary Perdue calls this a listening tour, where he especially wants producers and consumers to tell him about what they see as the most pressing issues for the 2018 Farm Bill. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Well, in today's livestock news, stakeholders now have a new plan to better prepare for and respond to the threat of emerging commodity animal diseases. Rod Bain has the details.
The U.S. livestock and poultry industries, veterinary agencies, and veterinarians have dealt with their share of emerging animal diseases the past two decades, threats that have called for significant preparations and response among stakeholders.
Such as porcine reproductive and respiratory syndrome, West Nile virus, and more recently, porcine epidemic diarrhea virus have made us realize that our traditional response plans for such diseases as foot and mouth disease or classical swine fever virus or avian influenza is that we needed some sort of flexible plan to address these newly emerging diseases.
Leanne Thomas of the Veterinary Services Division of USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service says that led to an effort started 3 years ago among stakeholders to develop what would become a new emerging animal disease preparedness and response plan.
Veterinary Services developed an emerging animal disease preparedness and response framework, and that document was provided to the public for general comment. We received comments from other federal and state agencies, from the Association of American Veterinary Laboratory Diagnosticians, from livestock groups, and from individuals.
And the emphasis of the plan, what Thomas calls a living document, is on flexibility.
The general overall framework or process would likely remain the same. It's just the small component may be changed to address a new situation that we hadn't considered with an emerging animal disease.
She provides an example of how this plan would work in a real-world setting, a hypothetical emerging disease that threatens an aquaculture commodity.
We would provide information that would feed into the analysis that would take place, and they would look at the results of that analysis and what risk was determined associated with that particular virus. Based on the risk, we would then look at possible response options, and our response options can vary greatly.
Options ranging from placing the disease threat on a watch list to the extreme case of formal control and eradication if needed to respond to an animal disease threat or outbreak. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Thanks, Rod. And the American Sheep Industry Association and its America Wool Council have launched a multifaceted campaign to take wool's incredible story straight to the consumer. A new American Wool logo was launched last year to kick off renewed promotional efforts, but they also have launched a new website, AmericanWool.org. That website will work in conjunction with a variety of social media sites to tell America's wool narrative in a multimedia fashion that includes stories, photos, and more. To learn more, just go to AmericanWool.org. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
There's a growing new type of farmer, and it's drawing a lot of attention. It was described to me as hobby farmers. These are people who worked in several occupations but were never farmers. They don't own a lot of acreage, just enough land to grow food crops and raise animals. Some farms are as small as 20 acres, some larger. Now, these are people who want to stay busy but not at the work they retired from. Raising animals is very popular, not the type of animals you generally associate with farming. The list includes alpacas, llamas, certain breeds of goats, and, of course, horses, even pigs. Not litters, just a couple of pigs. Not for profit. It's just something for retired people to stay busy. Sounds good to me. And that's Ag Review for today. Everett Grinder, AgNet West.
In today's interview segment, we are talking with 14-year-old Jake Reisdorf of Monterey County, who owns a beekeeping business and works to bring awareness to the importance of pollinators. Here's our conversation. Go ahead and give me your name, Jake, and where you're located and the name of your company.
Alrighty, my name is Jake Reisdorf, and I'm the owner and operator of Carmel Honey Company, and we're located in Carmel, California.
So, Jake, you recently got a pretty big honor for your beekeeping efforts and your efforts for the pollinators, but I want to start off with how you got started in this. How did you get started with your beekeeping?
Yeah, so I kind of got started off as a fifth grade project, and I was supposed to be a website designer. And I designed a website about honeybees, got really into honeybees, decided still keeping them, and it kind of just turned into a passion for me and my family.
And about how many hives do you have now?
We have around 125 hives.
Yeah.
So what does that take every day to take care of these bees?
So we usually check them once to twice a month. And we usually go out there and just manage them and make sure that they're doing okay, look for any diseases, and look for what's going on inside the hive, make sure they're doing good.
You're also involved right now in the UC Davis Master Beekeeper Program, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So what is that like?
So that's, it's really great, actually. The people who run that down there are the really, really great people. They really help us, and it really allows me to learn as much as possible. And it's kind of blown my mind, actually, how much there is to know about bees, you know, with everything going on with the bees, you know, from queen breeding to all sorts of stuff.
So I'm going to take a guess, but I'm going to guess that you're one of the younger beekeepers involved in this program and probably one of the younger beekeepers that we have around.
Yeah, so I'm the youngest beekeeper in that course, and I know there is a few other beekeepers out there who are my age, but to my knowledge, I'm the only one running the company.
And you're 14, is that right?
That is correct.
And so that's a pretty big responsibility for a 14-year-old. What's it like being so young and having such, you know, this business that you take care of?
It's actually really crazy. You know, I have school as one of my part-time jobs and the business as my other. And I'm kind of able to balance that out. And with the help of my family, we've been able to make it work.
And so you were recently honored by Bayer with their Community Leadership Award for your beekeeping. And one of the things that I noticed that they said that I really liked was what you want to do with some of the prize money that they give. Tell me a little bit about your dream for Pollinator World.
Yeah, so Pollination World, that's kind of been my dream. It's kind of like it's basically a bee had, which is a big, hairy, audacious idea. And it kind of Pollination World kind of includes basically birds, bats, butterflies, and bees. And the purpose of it is to kind of basically educate people about the importance of pollinators and the importance of how important they are to our survival as a human race, actually.
So why is it important to you that we educate people on this?
Well, you know, when I first started off, I knew nothing about bees. I had no recollection of what they were all about, what they did. All I knew was that they stung and made some honey. But really, over the past around 3 years, I've learned so much about bees and what they do. And I'm really kind of developed a sense of respect for them, basically, a respect for what they do for us and basically do for the world. And I kind of want to share that with other people and let them know that they're not just here to sting you and make honey, that they're out there to actually help us and help pollinate and just try to be out there.
And you do that a little bit already, I read, as part of your Jake Gives Back program. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so my Jake Gives Back program is basically like I go out and give talks to elementary schools and to really anybody who lives in Rotary clubs, Garden clubs, and I also give back. Give back a lot of money to a lot of different facilities that are working on trying to preserve the bees and trying to help them.
So it sounds like this is something. So you know the saying, "Put your money where your mouth is." Obviously, this is something you're passionate about, it, but you're not just talking about it. You're actually doing something. How would you encourage other people to do that as well?
Good question, actually. one of the things that you could do is to help bees out is to help support local beekeepers in the area and help support places that are trying to research bee health and education. You can also help by putting plants in your backyard, you know, bee-friendly plants, being able to rotate, you know, basically them through the different seasons. And you can also put out water for the bees as well for them to give them a drink.
All right. Now, I understand that your mom is with you at this moment. Can I put her on the spot and ask her a couple questions, too?
Of course.
Hi there.
Hi there. So can you go ahead and give us your name, too, please?
Sure. I'm Becky Reisdorf, and I'm Jake's mom.
All right. I want to give you a moment to just brag on your son. Tell us how proud you are of him and what his work means for you and your family.
Oh, goodness. It's been an incredible ride. You know, if you would have told me 3 years ago that I would own my own bee suit, I would know even a quarter, maybe an eighth of the information I know about bees right now, I would have told you were crazy. So beekeeping is incredibly difficult and incredibly rewarding at the same time. We've met some amazing people. Beekeepers are such cool individuals. We roll into conferences and, you know, we're not the norm, I have to share with you. Because we are a family of four, and my daughter Brooke is involved as well, not necessarily as a beekeeper, but she does enjoy eating honey an awful lot and traveling with us. And so, like I said, we'll roll into a conference, and everyone looks to my husband first, thinking that he's the beekeeper or the reason why we're in this. And it's no, and then they look to me, oh, well, it must be a family business. No. And then finally they look at Jake, and they think it's kind of cute until he can sit at the table and, you know, talk intelligently about bees and what's going on with them and about his efforts to educate people. And it's pretty amazing to see them take him in and, you know, offer their support as well.
So there's a lot of community involved in this.
It really is. And like I said, the beekeeping community and that industry in general is just fabulous to be a part of. We're so thrilled.
So I understand that he's a little bit of a local celebrity as well there in Monterey County, and really does a lot as far as speaking and educating people. And how has this had an effect on him?
Honestly, it hasn't had much of an effect. Like I said, he's got a little sister who keeps him in check if he ever decides to have a big head from time to time, but not really. The community knows of him and knows what he does, and we still run into lots of people who've never heard of him or our company and are interested in learning more about bees. Not many people know about how important the pollinators are and what it means to our food system and what it means to the human race. So it's pretty crazy to see him. You know, he gets asked similar questions from elementary school kids to nursing homes, and he's definitely not afraid to talk in front of people and take the Q&As, and you can see him excel in front of people when he's sharing the knowledge that he has.
For our listeners who might want to support the business or learn more about it, is there some place where they can get more information or contact you guys?
Absolutely. Yes, please. We are at CarmelHoneyCompany.com. That's our website. That's how this whole thing started. We also are on social media, so Instagram and Facebook, Twitter, you can find us there. And I have to share with you, the reason why we're in a construction zone a bit is we're opening a storefront in Carmel by the Sea at the Carmel Plaza. We have honey and hive-related items here for sale, and again, a portion of the proceeds will go back to those donations, the groups that Jake chooses. To support honey and bee education. And we also have a part of the store is an education room. So that way we would be able to show videos and teach people more about real honey and bees.
That is That's really exciting. I'm very excited for you guys. It's part of his pollination world.
Thank you.
Coming to fruition already. Can I talk with Jake one more quick minute?
Yep.
So the last question that I wanted to ask you is, where do you see you going from here? What's in store for you in the future?
I really don't know. I mean, I'm just going to keep going with this business and see where it takes me. Me and my family are really kind of in for the ride, and we're just, you know, letting it kind of drag us along. We're just following it, and I don't really know where we're going to be in the future, but it's definitely going to be someplace nice as long as we keep the bees alive.
I just want to thank you for taking a few minutes out of your afternoon and talking with us and letting people know about your business and what's going on. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know?
No, not at all. Just come on down to the store and come check it out. And you're definitely invited. And thank you for allowing me to talk to you today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks again to Jake and his mom for joining us this morning. This is Farm City Newsday by Agnet West, and we will be back in just a moment.
It's time to rethink what you know about clean American propane and what it can do for your operation. Want efficient, reliable power independent of the grid? Propane can do that. Power for EPA-compliant engines without all the extra fluids and filters? Propane can do that. Eliminate fuel theft. Lower hourly fuel costs. Reduce downtime. Propane can do all of that. Discover all the things propane can do on your farm at propanecandothat.com.
Attention, California citrus growers, production managers, industry professionals. The 26th annual Citrus Expo in Fort Myers, Florida is proud to host U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Sunny Perdue on August 16th, the first day of the show. Make plans now to attend the 26th annual Citrus Expo on August 16th and 17th for an opportunity to mingle with Secretary Perdue on the trade show floor. The latest in citrus research and data will also be presented at over a dozen seminars. Don't wait. Pre-register now at citrusexpo.net.
Okay, Mike is calling from Davenport. Go ahead, Mike. You're on Soil Talk.
Yeah, guys. The engine isn't performing like it should, and I'm wondering what's going on.
All right, couple of questions, Mike. Do you have high porosity in aggregates? Is there a porous medium for gas exchange?
I don't know.
Well, hey, look, Mike, if you want performance, you got to find out if it's good under the hood, huh?
Okay, how?
Stop by your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today, Mike. They can help you supercharge your soil and get that engine cranking it out for you.
Find out what you can do to maximize your farm's production engine. It's soil. Through soil health management systems, you can lower input costs, increase yields, and drought protect your farm. Stop by your local Natural Resources Conservation Service office today.
The California Association of Food Banks Farm to Family Program helps growers and packers recoup costs for products that may otherwise go unused. The program takes secondary products or excess fruits and vegetables from the field to your local food bank and beyond. Many growers and packers receive reimbursement for picking and pack-out costs in addition to receiving a California state tax credit. Join the more than 100 growers and packers who already participate in Farm to Family. Visit cafoodbanks.org to learn more. That's cafoodbanks.org. Farm to Family. Good for families, good for farmers.
Your Beef Checkoff does all kinds of things to help make sure consumers feel good about buying beef, like researching the health benefits of beef and sharing this news with healthcare professionals, or discovering new lean cuts of beef like the Denver cut steak, which fits an active lifestyle, or sharing the good news about these new beef products and cuts with chefs, grocers, and consumers. Get to know your checkoff and start sharing your views at mybeefcheckoff.com. Paid for by the Beef Checkoff.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by Agnet West. Farm incomes and commodity prices may be falling for a third straight year, but farmland is generally holding its value and increasing in some cases. Here's Gary Crawford with more.
With farm incomes and commodity prices still falling, you would expect to see farmland values falling as well, but a new USDA report says actually
land prices have held in there.
USDA Outlook Board Chairman Seth Meyer. Now, these numbers we're giving are national. The report says U.S. cropland is averaging this year the same as last year's $4,090 an acre, and farm real estate values
up a little over 2% for all land, but that's also, you know, land and buildings. That's all farmland for all purposes.
That's up $70 an acre from last year. Seems landowners are holding on to their farmland, not much sales action.
If folks think that this downturn is just a temporary softness, then you don't want to put your land out there unless you absolutely have to, because you say, well, it'll come back.
And so overall, cropland values are holding steady, except in the drought-stricken northern plains, where they're down by almost 4.5%, but they are up 6% in the southern plains. But for cash rents, USDA reports those heading down, a little bit down, an average of $8 an acre down from last year. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
More rainfall and cooler weather in the northern plains comes too late to help spring wheat, but could be good for the corn and soybean crops. Here's Stephanie Ho.
The drought situation in the northern plains appears to have stabilized.
Much cooler weather has moved in, and there has been some recent rainfall. So for the week ending August 1st, we saw very little change in the overall drought coverage across the Dakotas and Montana.
That was USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey.
We're sitting at 82% drought coverage in both the Dakotas, 53% drought coverage in Montana.
He says the favorable weather won't help some of the crops.
Unfortunately, this rain and cooler weather is just about all occurring too late to help with spring-sown small grains, such as spring wheat, barley, oats, some of which have already been harvested.
But could be a boost for others.
It's not too late in parts of the eastern Dakotas to help out with corn and soybeans.
He adds that the weather also will benefit rangelands and pastures. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by AgNet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.